Welcome back to Nos Audientes, the Sound at Heart podcast. I'm Jeremiah O'Shan, joined as always by Aaron Campo. How are you, Aaron?
I'm good. I'm very good, Jeremiah. How are you?
You know, this weather is awful, and it's depressing. I really want to be more pumped up this week because of Cascadia Cup, and I'm having a hard time getting. I'm excited for the game, but I'm having a hard time having that roll over into my everyday life.
I can understand that. I have been feeling the same way. The key, I think, is to listen to the Wipers a lot. I think that captures the spirit of this weather. But the Wipers are from Portland, so I don't know if we can...
Oh, why are you doing that? And then you tweeted... I can't believe you tweeted the other day that you were in a Starbucks.
Well,
did
I...
Did you realize what
Have you ever been to Georgetown, Jeremiah? There's a Starbucks and, like, 10,000 semi-trucks. That's it. That's all there is.
Okay,
and somehow okay, a restaurant.
I would see it, but I would think it would have been... You should have lied and said, I'm at Georgetown Brewery. And they're playing this. How weird.
I should have said that. You're right. No, you're right. I should have lied.
Yeah.
Where I was.
I mean, I think a lot of image is just lying, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Well, we're going to have plenty of time, though, to talk about this Cascadia Cup week. For right now, we should probably dispense with the week that was. We had two games. We only salvaged a point out of those two games. I don't know, though. I wasn't particularly dissatisfied with that. I think I would have liked to have had four. I would have loved to have had six.
Yeah.
But I would have settled. I think 1 point felt like, yeah, you know, I didn't think. I thought we could have easily come out of DC with a point, or we could have ended up with none, which we did, obviously.
Right.
And, that was probably the worst game we've played all year. It was certainly the least attractive game the Sounders have played all year. And we only lost 2-1 on the road against a team that was very motivated. The Sounders were probably a little weary from they had just come off an emotional victory against Toronto FC. They had some very real injury concerns. Mauro Rosales was not playing. It was, you know, in addition to all the other losses that they've had, you know, it was probably a predictable result in a lot of ways.
I think so. I mean, and we talked about this game previously, and the question was, you know, will you be happy with how many points will you be happy with from this road trip? And I said that I thought DC was a winnable game and a game that the Sounders should have won. And I still think that that's true, but I also think, you know, you're right. It's looking at the circumstances surrounding it, looking at, I really think that some heads were going to roll in DC if there was a performance as poor as they'd been putting out there the last few games came to pass.
You're talking about DC in
DC. Correct. Yeah. They're, you know, it has not been a happy place as of late. Let's put it that way.
I actually read a story that was suggesting that this DC team was not so different than last year's DC team, which, as we all know, was a historically awful team. But go on.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I buy that, but
I don't.
In any case, there were reasons to be slightly concerned going into that game, and you know, lo and behold, all of them came to fruition. The fitness was definitely a concern. As I am wont to do, I questioned Ziggy's decision to start that same lineup, playing that same formation on the road. I can understand it. I mean, that team looked fantastic against Toronto. But with DC having so much speed on the flanks and maybe some concerns about the fitness of Tyson Wall, who has not played a lot at this level, especially this year, and then all of a sudden he's the starting left back, apparently. And, you know, he got burned a lot, and I thought he had a fairly solid game, but he had to push forward a lot in that formation, and he got caught out a few times, and James Riley did as well. The two goals that DC scored were identical in pretty much every way, except that the cross and the goal were scored by the opposite number each time. The first time it was Davies to Wolf, and then the second time it was Wolf to Davies, but pretty much the same exact situation.
Yeah, and let's talk about that a little bit. Because I would say that is the one big concern from that game was the inability to, you know, I should say this. it what it did is it kind of highlighted one of the big weaknesses of a diamond, a 4-4-2 diamond, as opposed to more of a wide, where you have real wide midfielders that the Sounders are more used to. And that is that the width is going to have to come from the fullbacks. And so the fullbacks end up getting sometimes sucked a little farther upfield, and they have a little bit more recovering to do. And against a team that has some speed, like DC United, that can be very problematic. And as we saw, both goals were essentially the result of the fullbacks getting pulled too far upfield.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, the thing is that the Sounders, even in their wider sort of 4-2-3-1 or 4-1-1-3-1 or what, you know, whatever it is. That
whatever we want to call it this week.
They're the bucket or the arrow or whichever. Even in that formation, they've shown a tendency to give up goals on counters. They've shown a tendency to be a little soft against counterattacking play. And, you know, when you put a formation out there that's maybe a little more susceptible than other formations to counterattacking play on the road against the team that plays the counter, after a game 3 days ago, four days prior, I guess, with the exact same lineup, you know, that can cause some problems. And it did. It very much did. But I think that the important thing to take away from that game is that as bad as this team looked, as bad as the Sounders looked, I don't think there was really any stretch in that game where they were significantly better than DC, if you consider what DC tries to do to other teams. The Sounders had, you know, had some spells of possession, but DC's game plan sort of allows for that. I mean, it's kind of what they do. So you consider that, and then you consider the fact that I believe they had a ball hit the post. The Sounders did late in the game. They had a couple of very good chances on headers. Montero had a shot stopped that maybe you wouldn't expect to have had him had stopped. So, you know, they really easily could have come out with a point from that situation. And I think it hammers home that there's a lot of talent on this team. The biggest concern, I think, definitely in the immediate future, especially when the fixture congestion comes into play, is what's, you know, whether they're going to have the fitness and the depth at some key positions to hold up. I think everybody's comfortable with the depth at center back. I think everybody's comfortable with the central midfield depth and to a certain extent the depth on the wings, but striker and wide defenders, not as much. And I think that those two positions were, you know, the lack of fitness or lack of stamina, I guess, I think we're to large extent to blame for what happened in that game. And so I think that's something to watch for sure.
Yeah. No, I would agree that that there is going to be some fitness issues, especially at the less deep positions. You know, you and I both were at the reserve game this week, and we saw some of that depth that was on display. Michael Tete, actually, I thought both of us, I think, thought he looked much better than we expected him to. So that was encouraging. That's another left back. Unfortunately, we still, you know, Zach Scott played center back and he played right back in that game, and he was fine. I don't think, you know, like Zach Scott, it's fine. I don't think we want him starting.
No. But he's a good guy to have around.
No, he's a good guy to have around. But I don't, you know, we don't want to get too far off track. Anyway, we also had the game against Columbus, which was, I don't know, it was a tie. I think we, you know, once you watch the whole game play out, you're happy with a point. Obviously, you would have liked to have gotten three. But I don't know that the Sounders really could have had a realistic claim on 3 points in that game.
No, I don't think so. Columbus is a lot better than I think anyone expected. And they, you know, playing at home, for whatever reason, they don't really seem to have much of a home field advantage in terms of the crowd. The weather, I think, would sort of neutralize their home field advantage of, you know, in terms
they
of...
They have 7,000 people supposedly in the stands.
Yeah, I don't think I buy that. But, you know, and yeah, it was a monsoon, so I
those conditions were pretty bad.
It was bad. I'm not going to say that I can't blame them, but, you know, it's understandable.
The early goal from Freddie Montero was a very well taken goal. It was a great cross from Eric Freeburg, right? And it was, you know, it was a classic, you know, goal scorer's kind of goal that he you know, it was not by any stretch of the imagination a gimme goal. It was something that, you know, there's only probably a handful of guys in the league that are going to be able to score those kind of goals on a regular basis. And that was pretty early in the game. I don't know, 13th minute maybe?
I think it was the 8th. I think it was 8th minute. Yeah.
It's even earlier than that.
Yeah.
And for a while, the Sounders looked like they might be able to hold on to that win. And, it's frustrating because that penalty that they gave up was late. Wasn't super late, but it was late enough that you started to feel like, oh, maybe we can pull out 3 points in this game. Yeah. It was really kind of a weird penalty because I know Arlo on his original call said that Patrick Ioane pulled down Chad Marshall, but for the life of me, I just didn't see a clear penalty on that. You know, I'm sure that he had some of his shirt. It's one of those things where you see it not called so often that it's frustrating when it does get called.
Yeah, it's the classic I've seen them given sort of situation. You know, it's by the rule book, I think he did have his shirt. I think he did have at least some hand in him going down. But, you know, the league really needs to get more or I guess I shouldn't say the league, but USSF really needs to get more consistent about calling penalties in that situation. Because it's like the holding call in American football. You could give a penalty on every set piece or corner kick that's right. taken in the league if you're going to call that. And, you know, in the reserve game, we saw Nate Jaquia get put into a bear hug and pulled out of the way of a free kick. You know, and, like, that's, like, I wouldn't expect that to be called in MLS, honestly.
No, and that's what's so frustrating about it. It's not, you know, like, so many things with MLS officiating, I don't think, like, as the isolated incident, I a lot of times think that you can, you know, like, with so many things, you can really go either way. But the thing with, you know, it's just that it's the inconsistency. It's the, is this a foul today or is this not a foul today? Is this a foul at this moment or is it not a foul at this moment? And it's, you know, it's not even a matter of it being, you know, sometimes it can be inconsistent within a game. And I realize that's how it is all over the league, all over the world, I mean. So it's not like I don't, you know, I certainly don't want to spend too much time fussing over a penalty call, but it is frustrating. That said, I think that a tie was probably an acceptable result. The Crew definitely had the better of play in that match. You know, from about minute 30 onward, I don't know that the Sounders had a whole lot to offer in terms of challenges. Facito was able to create one chance towards the end, but there wasn't a lot of stuff going on in that game from the Sounders' end.
No, I think that once Columbus got the penalty, it was kind of they
Hold
didn't.
On, dear life.
Yeah, they, I don't think that they really felt like I don't think Columbus that is felt like the Sounders were really gonna do too much to bother them, and so I think Columbus just kicked it up a notch. And the last half hour of that game was pretty nerve wracking. It was just pretty much a constant assault on the Sounders' goal, but, you know, with that being the case and with that being said, I thought that they held up very well. Casey Keller had to make a couple of pretty fantastic saves, but I didn't see any horrid defending. I didn't see a lot of terrible mistakes. I think most of the saves Keller had to make were from, you know, from long-range efforts that were just struck really well, and that's about all you can do, I think, when you're in that situation, when the other team is bossing the game so much. I think it was a huge – I think the fitness, once again, was kind of a huge thing. And Nagel and Fusito definitely brought something else. But when you can't get the ball through the midfield, you know, because you're so bunkered down and you just have to hope that one of those two guys can create something on the counterattack without any support, I mean, you put those guys on as a prayer of getting a goal and as enough of a threat that maybe the other team has to keep one or two guys back a little deeper than they might otherwise do.
Yeah, and I will say, though, that there was one bright spot, at least for me, one actually pretty significant bright spot for me, and that was the play of Servando Carrasco, who I thought, you know, he had an edge to him that I think the Sounders could really use. I think he displayed some skill that was actually pretty impressive for a person that plays his position, which is really more of a holding midfielder. I liked a lot what I saw out of Servando Carrasco. I actually, to the point where it makes you start wondering if the Sounders might be better off with Carrasco playing alongside Alonso on a semi-regular basis.
Yeah, I think that definitely that's, you know, that's something that they should be looking at. I think I like that look a lot more with Steve Zakuani in the attacking game, but it's something that I could see working next year for sure. I mean, Osvaldo Alonso is probably going to be around next year. I think that's, if not a certainty, a fairly high probability. And, you know, two holding midfielders in a formation does not necessarily have to be inherently defensive. And, no. You know, if you've got the right attacking talent to make that work, you can certainly make it work. And, you know, not to say that Osvaldo Alonso is not a good passer, not a good distributor, not a good sort of rear hub, because he certainly is. I think that there's more potential for creativity from Carrasco. And, you know, that sort of two-way deep line playmaker and still sort of destroyer in the midfield is a very valuable thing to have. Kyle Beckerman is that kind of player.
Yeah, and I could see Servando Carrasco being very much in the mold of Kyle Beckerman. Actually, that's a good comparison, I think.
And as much as I can't stand Kyle Beckerman, I'd love to have him on the team. He would have to get a haircut, but, you know, he would be watching here in that situation. And so, you know, I would definitely like to see him get some time. I think that road games are a good situation for that when you're maybe playing a little bit more defensively. I think that, you know, Osvaldo Alonso is going to need a breather every now and again, and especially in the Open Cup, Carrasco can play that sort of Alonso destroyer role. I think that Tete is probably has the chance to be more of a huge impact, because I think that just, you know, from a skill standpoint and from what he can offer in terms of explosiveness, he has the potential to be a very special player, but Carrasco, I think, definitely has the chance to make a much bigger impact in the near future.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there. Some of the people that we've read on the site recently have expressed some concern about Carrasco's seemingly, let's just call it aggressive nature.
And
people have called it worse. I don't see anything super concerning. You know, that challenge he had against Niarco a few weeks ago was a sloppy challenge. I don't think it was like one of these crazy aggressive challenges. And he got a retroactive red card for it, which I think is fair, especially after seeing the replay of it. But, you know, and he had an incident against Columbus where he kind of was, you know, actually the thing I thought was funny about it was that he wasn't posturing. He just was kind of standing his ground, and he was, you know, I guess he kind of got into it a little bit with Emilio Renteria. And I don't know, he didn't throw a punch. He didn't do anything that was really overtly aggressive. He just kind of showed that he wasn't going to back down from this guy, and that's fine. I think that the Sounders could use that, and especially on a team that feels a fair amount of that teams take a few liberties with, we'll just say. You know, Freddie Montero, as much as he gets derided for being a flopper, he's legitimately one of the most fouled players in the league. Most of the Sounders attacking players have been among the most fouled players in the league. And, you know, when you have guys that are getting fouled like that, sometimes you need someone, you know, you don't necessarily need an enforcer like you have in hockey, but sometimes it's nice to have some guys on your team that, you know, can give it out a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, certainly within, you know, I'm not trying to make this into like a big physical match or anything, but there's, at some degree, it's Servando Carrasco's are nice to have. I'll just leave.
Servando Carrasco, I don't want to say that he gives off a mean vibe. I don't really think that that's accurate. I mean, you've met him and you've talked to him, and he certainly
interviewed on the show.
Yeah, in the interview we had with him, he seemed like a very affable fellow. But, you know, Renteria is not a dude that I think I would feel comfortable if he was trying to get up in my face. Like, he's a big dude.
He's a pretty big dude, yeah.
And Carrasco seemed, if I could, you know, put my finger on Carrasco's reaction, it was more amused than anything. Like,
right.
And you don't have, you know, you don't put that out there without being a fairly tough individual,
right.
And
yeah,
I would like him, you know, I would like him to maybe be a little less sloppy in his tackles, but
yes.
I like him a lot as well. I think he could be a very, very useful player going forward.
So the, and the other player that I think we need to talk about from this road trip was Roger Levesque. You know, you talk to 10 different people, and I think you're probably going to get 10 different opinions of how well he played. You know, he in the Columbus match, he had two huge – well, I need to rewind that. He had a great pass that probably should have been a goal against DC United on the Alvaro Fernandez header. Perfectly placed ball. He did not have a great game, I don't think, in either games. I don't, you know, I think people were wondering why Siggy used him essentially as a target forward when, you know, when Jaquia couldn't, you know, and let's get this out of the way, first of all. Nate Jaquia was not fit to play against Columbus for 60 minutes, or else I think he would have started. I think the idea that Levesque was picked over Jaquia just based on fit, you know, based on anything other than fitness is probably stretching the imagination a little bit. And Levesque is just not going to give you the exact same thing. There's just no way he's not going to give you the exact same thing that Jaquia is, but he's a player that's at least capable of doing some of the dirty work that you want that player to do.
He is. And I mean, I think that the more frustrating thing for a lot of people is Mike Fusito not starting. And, you know, we've had this discussion in the comments on the blog and in other places, I think. And the reality of the situation is you cannot play Freddy Montero or Mike Fusito as a target forward. It's just, it's not feasible. It's not going to happen. Neither one of them are big enough to, you know, go with their back to goal against a big 6'4" center back.
And more than that, I don't think that you're maximizing either one of their talents if you use them that way. And to the point that it's like, why are they out on the field if you're going to use them in a way that they're not effective? Like, I suppose you could throw them out there and maybe they could, you know, maybe they could make do on some level.
Right.
But why? I mean, why would you want to have Freddy Montero out there making do when Freddy Montero should be out there, you know, attacking the goal?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's the thing that people need to realize is that Roger Levesque was basically a body that was out there to win balls in that situation. He was somebody that could hold up play a little bit more. He, you know, he's not a terrible passer. He could get the ball to where it needed to go. And was it ideal? Of course not. Of course it wasn't ideal. But, you know, it's not ideal that your first choice striker gets a blood clot in his knee. It's not ideal that your second choice striker wasn't fit to go a full 90 because he has his own injury concerns. I mean, it's just, you know,
designated player striker can't figure out how he fits on the team.
Right. I mean, like, no, none of this was supposed to happen. And I think that when things go wrong in that way, where you end up with Roger Levesque starting against Columbus, people want to blame the most visible target, and the most visible target is Siggy. And I mean, I've been as critical of Siggy as I think anyone, but this, I understand why he did what he did. You know, the options there are stick with what you know and use personnel that maybe isn't 100% suited to the role, or completely change your tactical approach. And Siggy chose, you know, to stick with what he knew. I don't think that's just a surprise to anybody. And, you know, if that's what he's comfortable with, then I'm not going to second guess him. And
I think beyond that, though, it's not just what he's comfortable with. I think you have to keep in mind that this is what the team, how the team practices, what, you know, who, you know, I don't, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that it's impossible to switch up to a lone striker situation on the fly, but, you know, I would think it would require a fair amount of tactical difference that is not easy to do while you're on the road.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good way to put it. And, you know, I also think that people see teams switch up tactically a lot and say, well, you know, there are teams in the Premier League, for example, that will switch tactically, completely change styles based on who they're playing. And people, you know, say, well, you know, if Chelsea can do it, or even a team like Sunderland can do it, the Sounders can do it. And, well, no, they can't, because, you know, Chelsea is two or three quality Premier League teams deep. They can put a solid lineup out there based on the personnel of the opposing team. The Sounders can't do that. No team in MLS can do that. You know, they have to make do with what they have. And what they had was a choice between Roger Levesque and Mike Fusito. And, you know, it's not ideal, but there it was.
All right, coming up next, we have an interview with Michael Orr of Mal Football Show. He's going to talk about the Timbers. And then for the final segment, we're going to talk about Cascadia Cup.
All right. We're here with Michael Orr, who's the co-host of Mal Football Show on Cascadia FM, which is well, why don't you tell the audience when they can hear you and the setup of the show?
Sure. The station is Cascadia.fm, and that's just an online radio station based out of Portland. And we do actually have a lot of listeners to the station in general in Seattle. But the show is on Tuesdays and Fridays from 4 to 5 Pacific. And you can hear it live through the website, and then it's available as a podcast anytime after that.
All right. Well, cool. I guess we can get into actual soccer now. What has been the ride like been for the Portland Timbers? I mean, seeing you guys from up in Seattle, it's been pretty impressive to watch you guys grow and go through all the stuff.
It's been really interesting to sort of see them for the first time as most people did at the Cascadia Summit, and then sort of go through the disaster that was the Colorado and Toronto games to start. And then to now come and have won four of the last five games. It's been, I mean, obviously as a Timber supporter, it's been fantastic. But more than that, it's been impressive just to see the way that they have kind of developed a little bit of an identity and really sort of solidified themselves as a team that is not a pushover at home. There are absolutely still problems with away games, but that's, I think, to be expected with a first-year team. And, you know, even some of the players are still just kind of arriving within the last week or two. So there's definitely a learning curve in terms of that. But as a fan, it's been terrific. I mean, two games on national TV and, you know, four home games in the first 2 months of the season. It's been pretty fun.
So you brought up the whole road home dichotomy that's going on with you guys. What, I mean, can you attribute that to anything? I mean, is it just something that is, it's not just that you guys are winning on the road and not winning on, or you're winning at home and not winning on the road. It's there's a pretty drastic goal difference even. I want to say you got like a -7 goal difference on the road and +4 at home. Must be +5 at home. What do you think is going on there in terms of home versus road other than the normal stuff?
You know, part of it is the teams that the Timbers have actually played. I can't give an adequate response or reason for a 2-0 loss to Toronto. There isn't one. But two of the other three, I mean, away to Colorado when they were full strength, their first game after winning the Cup, and that's the first ever game for the Timbers, and away to L.A., are not exactly losses that I think people would be embarrassed about anywhere in the league. The other was an away draw to New England. And, you know, so I think that's part of it. I think part of it was that the first three games of the season were all away, just as the stadium was being completed, the construction here in Portland. So not having had a chance to play in front of the home crowd and sort of establish sort of a rhythm or something like that, you know, as they've have done now since playing at home, there's a definite difference. Like even though the scoreline was 3-0 in LA, they looked much more competent than they did in the first game against Colorado. So I think that the combination of the sort of order of scheduling because of the construction of the stadium is part of it. But yeah, the other thing is there is a legitimate home field advantage in Portland, and you guys are well aware of that in Seattle, and it makes a difference. I mean, it's sort of logically, it doesn't make any sense. Like why would, you know, more noise in your favor make you play better? But it does. And it definitely has an effect for the Timbers, even at this early stage where, you know, a lot of them are still just getting used to it. So,
you bring up an interesting point. That was one of the things that early on the Sounders actually almost seemed to struggle with at times, is having a almost too much of a home field advantage where there are, they put too much pressure on themselves and they do all kinds of stuff that maybe they wouldn't do on the road. Teams come in more pumped up. I mean, for whatever reason, the Timbers seem to have been able to avoid all the pitfalls that come with almost getting too pumped up for being at home. And how would you describe the home atmosphere and how the Timbers have been handling it?
The atmosphere is sort of as advertised. Yeah. It's outrageously loud. It is a small venue, all things considered, and basically everywhere has a roof over it, so all of the sound stays in. And the Timbers Army is 3,500 season ticket holders at one end of the stadium, and making noise from the second they're allowed in the gates, let alone when the game starts. So I mean, it's a real atmosphere. There's no doubt about it. It's uncomfortably quiet at halftime, and it kind of makes you wonder what it's like in other stadiums where there isn't quite as loud of a support. But I think there is that danger of getting too intense or getting too carried away with sort of the support. And I think they've done a pretty good job so far of avoiding that. They have been up a couple of goals in two of those games and then given up some late ones. But in the last two games, it's been a much more composed look from the Timbers. And, the atmosphere is, that's sort of what the club is selling to the fans who haven't necessarily been going to games during the USL era. And, it's an honest sell because it's not fabricated, but that's as much of the story about the Timbers, I think, in the media has been about the sort of the singing of the national anthem and the big TIFO display, whatever. I don't know if that answers the question.
No, I think it does answer the. I mean, it answers the question in terms of I wanted to find out about the atmosphere there, and you did a good job of sharing that. What would you say, though, is, obviously this is a huge game for the Timbers. It's a big game for the Sounders. What's your expectation? Are you coming up to Seattle for the game?
I will be coming. I will be there on a press pass, though, so I will not be in the away section or going up on the bus or anything like that. But in terms of the game, the Timbers Army is sending 500 people, I mean, as many as were allowed. And I think, without knowing specifically your feelings on 500 tickets, I think you guys would probably agree that you'd like to send more than 500 here and would probably be willing to accept more than 500 of ours there. But, it is a big deal. Obviously, it's the first game of the cup competition, or the sort of the renewal of the sort of three-legged cup competition. And that's important. It's important just in terms of the table. And I think for Portland, it's important besides the fact that it's Seattle. I think beyond that, it's important to play another away game and try to do better than, any of the other four away games. I mean, the Timbers have 1 point in four matches away from Portland and 12 from four in Portland. So it's, it's imperative if this team has any chance or any expectation of challenging for a playoff position, you can't win every game at home and lose every game away and have any chance of that. So, it's an easier trip to make. It's not flying across the country. And so I don't know. I think that the Timbers are going to show well. I think that they've really, since in the last game and a half, really since our designated player Diego Chará came, he's really made a complete difference in the style and sort of the progression through the game that the Timbers have. And I think just giving him another week and another game to play, I think is a benefit. I don't know that that means that the Timbers are going to win. I don't know that there's really any real evidence that the Timbers can play away games as successfully as they can in home games, but there is the added incentive, and a lot of the guys who will be playing in the Summit earlier in the year and kind of understand what the atmosphere is about a little bit and have seen the Seattle players, a number of them anyway, firsthand and already played against them in even if it was a sort of a game that didn't actually matter. So, I'm looking forward to it, even if it wasn't so close to home, because it should be a really interesting game between two teams that I think are actually pretty good.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that part of what is making this such a highly anticipated game, at least at this point, is that both these teams seem like they're reasonably well matched, and they are both playing, the Sounders haven't got off to the best start, but they haven't looked bad, I don't think, and they haven't looked outright bad in any of their losses even. And
Casey Keller's been terrific.
Yeah, Casey's been good, and the scoring woes of early in the season seem to be beyond them, and so it's definitely, obviously the Sounders are a little shorthanded. I'm sure you know that they've lost three of their best offensive players at various times. Four, I guess last week they were down. They started the game without, I think, four of their top five offensive players. But anyway, it's been an interesting start to the season. Just real quick, what would you say the anticipation is like for Portland fans for this game? I mean, do you get a sense that there's a nervousness? Are they excited? I mean, how would you describe, the last few days since you guys played Soccer Night in America?
There's definitely an anticipation. I wouldn't say there's a nervousness, but it's a little different than if we were hosting the game. I think that the feeling in July when the game is here will be it'll be much bigger. I mean, certainly this was the first date apart from the very first game and the first home game. This is the first sort of game that people really said, okay, this is one that I'm going to try my best to get there, or I know I'm making plans well in advance of where I'm going to watch it and things like that. So, and it's certainly not the first Portland Seattle game. I mean, it's so
there have been a few others, I guess, apparently.
Yeah, a handful over the years, and they've always been characterized by passion and intensity, sometimes maybe more by the fans than the players, depending on the year. But there's definitely a buzz about it. Everybody's aware that this is the game on the schedule this week, but since it's not here, only 500 people are going to go to the game instead of 18,500. So it's, I think in terms of the Timbers Army, it's the number one thing. In terms of the sort of more casual fans who maybe are a little bit newer, I think they're going to learn what kind of rivalry it is and kind of what it's like. But I don't know that that's necessarily built in, other than just the general Portland-Seattle rivalry, not limited to soccer.
And so what's your, in terms of the game, do you have an expectation for the game? Are you, do you expect the Timbers to come out and play, what would you say that they're, what do you expect to see from them in terms of playing style and the way they kind of go about attacking this game?
I think that the Timbers are going to go and look for an early goal. I don't think that they're going to. It's been a little bit tricky because the Timbers, when they give up early goals, they almost exclusively lose. And that would be a major disaster if the Timbers gave up an early goal. But I don't think that they're going to sit back and try to defend against giving up early goals. I think they're going to go and be positive from the start. And the Timbers have a very sort of attack-oriented team. I mean, there's sort of electric outside midfielders and two very good forwards. And then the outside backs, they may as well just be sort of wing backs. I mean, they play in the attack as often as they do in defense. So the Timbers are absolutely looking to score goals. And I think you can see the potential for that in the sort of seven goals in two games from 2 weeks ago. That said, I think that it's been really promising, at least from a Timbers fan perspective, to see two 1-0 games in the last two weekends and against good to very good competition, and to know that the Timbers can play in a low scoring, more sort of drawn out game that's not sort of end to end. So
my expectation on it, it seems like, oh, go ahead.
Oh, I'm just gonna say my expectation is that they're gonna try to play very open and get a goal. I don't think that they'll get frustrated if they don't, and if they don't get one early, simply because they just won the game on Friday night with a header in the 72nd minute. So I think that they feel comfortable at this point playing in a scoreless game where everything's on the line at the end, if need be. But one other thing I'll add just really quickly, the Timbers also have had some injuries, certainly not of the profile of the Sounders injuries, but the Timbers don't really have much by way of backup forwards at the moment. So there's not a lot by way of late substitutes for that goal that you need at the end or something like that. It's much more about sort of substituting like for like. And so that's definitely a question I have. If it's a 0-0 game or a 1-1 game or something like that, and it's the 80th minute, Portland doesn't really have somebody necessarily to bring on and get that goal you might need. So,
well, I think you'd I think you've answered all the big questions that we had. I really appreciate you coming on. Hopefully we'll get to talk to you on Saturday. We'll be at the game as well, and I guess we'll root for a good game. Obviously we're rooting for a Sounders victory, but definitely wouldn't mind seeing a good game.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Enjoy the reserve game.
Yeah, no, we will. It's getting ready to start, in case you can hear it in the background.
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks a lot. Cheers. Mm-hmm.
All right. Welcome back. So obviously this weekend we're going to be playing the Timbers twice. We're going to be playing them twice. We have the reserve game. What's your guess on the attendance of the reserve game, knowing that there was 920 people there supposedly for the Chivas USA?
It's going to be, I would imagine that there will be some Timbers Army folks that will stick around to come and support their side.
I'll be disappointed if there's not a decent Timbers Army crowd there.
I don't think it's going to be quite Cascadia Cup crowd. No. That was ridiculous, but I could see there being 1500 people there, and you know, just to get this out of the way, if you haven't gone to a reserve game, if you haven't really planned on it, you really should. I think that we both had a really good time. It's a much different experience, but you know, there are some exciting players in the reserves, and you know, you should check it out. But anyway,
yeah, I'll give another pitch for that. And there's no attendant. You don't have to pay to get in, but they are taking donations for the various community partners for the Sounders. And it's actually I think it's a really great experience. You know, we were basically hanging out with Alan Hinton and Arlo White and whoever else was just, and it was not like, and I'm not trying to like sit there and drop names. I mean, the reality was we were just sitting in the stands and fans were literally coming up and just hanging out with them and saying hi. And it was a pretty cool thing. I wouldn't necessarily go just to go talk to those guys. They might not like that, like me saying that, but I did. It was cool. I mean, it was a relaxed atmosphere. Like, that is the point.
Very
much. You know, Arlo had his kids.
Oh, well, on the other side, you know, Siggy and Adrian Hanauer were just hanging out. Those seats are open as well, so I'm sure you could have gone
in. And the reserve players, the real starters were hanging out in street clothes
I think the entire first team pretty much was hanging out over there. It's just, it's neat. It's cool. It's fun to see. It was really awesome to see Michael Tete from, 20 feet away. Really get, like, a good sense of, you know, of him as a player. And, yeah, it's a really fun time. This Sunday is a good opportunity to, I think, check it out.
Yeah, and you can go watch for yourself, see Mike Fecito, what all the hype is about.
Yeah, because you're not going to see any time in a game soon.
No. So anyway, we do have a game this week that is meaningful, that is not the reserve game, and it's very meaningful. It's obviously Timbers, and that is, I don't know, there was a poll on SeattleTimes.com, whatever their website is, probably not. SeattleTimes.com, but and they're asking would you be willing to trade in 1 point, essentially, like if you could guarantee a win against the Timbers, would you take two ties in the next game, or would you rather have 6 points? I didn't quite understand the math of it all, but
basically
the point was, would you surrender 1 point for a victory over the Timbers? I just thought it was way too easy of a question. Of course.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Like, I mean, and especially
in a second.
Especially in this league where, you know, the supporter shield isn't maybe as important as winning the league title, and you feel fairly confident that the Sounders are going to get to the playoffs, yeah, of course you would do that. Of course.
A better question, I think a more accurate question maybe, would you rather have the supporter shield or the Cascadia Cup?
Well, yeah, see, I think I would answer that one a little differently. But
right, I think that's a little, at least a little harder of a question.
Right, yeah. I like, honestly, I would trade a win for the Timbers over a loss for a game that the Sounders should win. I would trade a win for the Timbers. I would give Toronto the 3 points that they took from us.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No question. I would take a win, and I would, don't want to lose this game so badly. I really want to win it. I would say that a tie would be not satisfying.
No.
I'm not going to pretend like if we lose this game, I'm not going to act like it's not, I'm not pissed. There's no way.
There will be a bright side.
Sucks.
Yeah, there's going to be no bright side, and there's also going to be no me on Twitter for like a week.
I don't know. I might have to resign my post as the editor of MLS on SB Nation if the Sounders lose. I don't know that I really want to deal with it.
Yeah, no, it's
I wonder if they actually go dark for a week.
No, just change the entire page to black. Still keep writing
posts. It's not because we think we're gonna win. I'm not saying it because it's like I'm overconfident.
No,
I'm really like I want to win this game, and if we lose, it's gonna suck.
But that's why rivalry games are cool, you know.
Right.
Because it gives you something. I mean, if both of these teams were terrible and not making the playoffs, we would still care.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and
I'm excited. I'm really excited for this game. It should be I'm kind of kicking myself that I didn't plan better, and that I'm gonna be in the press box. I would much rather be in the stands for this game.
Yeah, I think so, definitely. I'm not jealous of your perch in the press box.
No, I'm not jealous of it either.
I'm also kind of scared to be in GA for this game. I think for once in my life, I might be the most sober person in any given location that I'm in.
And they're having this block party before the game?
Yeah, I don't know, it's going to be
about, apparently for 5 hours, they're going to be drinking out at... I feel like I need to go and just find out what's going on there, but it sounds like it could get out of hand pretty easily.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be unlike anything I've experienced in terms of watching live sports. You know, I never went to any Sonics Blazers games. I've never been to an Apple Cup or a UW Oregon game.
I've been to a San Jose State Fresno State football game.
I would imagine that's pretty pretty similar.
Exactly.
Just the same thing. Yeah. I think the closest I've been is to a Mariners Angels game, and I don't think that's gonna be really the same either. Yeah, I hate the Angels as much as I hate the Timbers, but I don't think that there are many people that could say that. So, it'll be new. It'll be fun. It'll be special. It'll be definitely special.
You know, baseball. We're getting pretty far off of topic here, I think. But no, who cares? What are we really going to – do people really want to hear a tactical breakdown of this game? We'll give it to you a little bit later. But the thing with soccer that's unlike – like I would say it's similar to, you know, Giants A – or not Giants A's, Giants Dodgers or whatever. It's not – I mean, it really is different because, you know, in baseball you end up having 18 games against your rivals. Right. This is one of two games. It's the only game at home. Even in football, American football – do I have to say that on the show?
I think so.
I think I do.
Yeah.
And you know, you're only gonna play your rival once, but right. it's only gonna be one home and the other. And I don't know. I just don't get the sense that there's. I mean, I don't know. Maybe the Bears and Packers and the Vikings and the Packers and some of those Midwest rivalries are maybe just as fierce. But like, there's no way like 49ers Rams was ever this fierce or
no. I don't think so.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's like the geographic nature of it. I mean, it's so much more like a college rivalry. I have to imagine that the closest thing that this is like to an Apple Cup or to a UW Oregon game
or a Civil War. Yeah.
Or Civil War. Yeah. I mean, it has to be much more like that.
Yeah. I think so.
Which I've never experienced.
Yeah. I think so. But I mean, I think that there's a tinge of nastiness that goes even beyond that. I mean, I will qualify this by saying that I'm not especially partial to either UW or Wazoo and Athletics. I root for them both. And if anything, I'm probably more partial to Wazoo. But, you know, UW and Wazoo kind of have a UW and Wazoo kind of have like a, there's not really hatred there. It's more of just the like little brother, big brother thing. And UW Oregon, there's hatred there, but it's just, it's more of a rivalry born out of Oregon becoming a dominant team. This is like a historic rivalry that has a lot of history that goes into the nastiness. You know, it's even different than those rivalries, and it's there's a continuation. You know, Roger Levesque playing in this game.
And speaking of the, yeah, I'm sorry, I don't mean to talk over you. That's no, very go ahead. Rude of me. That's poor podcasting. whatever.
Ethics.
Anyway, yeah, ethics. That's the word I was thinking of. But you know, I do think it's cool that you know Adrian Hanauer was an owner of the, or was the owner essentially of the USL Sounders. Gavin Wilkinson, I guess, was involved in the Timbers for quite some time. Merritt Paulson owned the Timbers for a while. So there's there's people that understand the rivalry that go beyond like that. There, it's a little deeper of a rivalry. You know, you have people like Alan Hinton who's involved with the Sounders still, who was around during the original rivalry games. You have, you know, obviously members of ECS and Timbers Army were both, you know, there's a fair number of fans that really understand that rivalry on a personal level. I mean, it's really a cool thing to see. And it's been interesting to be, you know, like admittedly, I've only been in town for a couple years. So this is like by far the most amped up this rivalry has ever been for me.
I think it's the most amped up this rivalry has ever been.
Ever. I mean, probably, really. I mean, not to be too hyperbolic about it, but I actually went through and looked at the records of attendance for this game, and I kind of expected there to have been some bigger attendance games in the heyday of the 70s because the Sounders were playing in the Kingdome, and I don't know, they could theoretically put in 50,000 fans there.
Right.
But 34,000 apparently, 34 and change was the biggest crowd ever. It was 79, I want to say, something like that. And this is going to be the biggest, this will be the biggest game. I mean, we were going to talk about this later, but it feels like a better transition to just go into it now. This idea of how big this, you know, the away ticket allocation, and the tarps staying on, you know, I think both of us feel a need to clarify some of the stances that we've taken, because I think there's a misconception that we are anti-expansion of the away seating and that we are anti-taking off the tarps and that we're kind of, no one has out and out called us front office shills or anything like that. But I kind of feel like there's this underlying sense that we don't have, that we're not on the fan side or we're not on the supporter side. And for me, I absolutely would love to see the tarps come off, at least for these games. I would love to see an expansion, a significant expansion of the away seating. But I'm also trying to be realistic about this is year one of this rivalry. No matter how much we say that there's templates out there, whether it's college or it's from Europe, that MLS has never dealt with anything like this in terms of away support. And so I understand MLS being, you know, having some trepidation about allowing, you know, inviting. That's the thing, is that it's not that, you know, supposedly Timbers Army is bringing 1,000 people up here. Who knows? I have no idea if they're really bringing 1,000 people, but that's what they claim, that there's 1,000 people coming up here. They only have 500 tickets. You know, maybe another 250 Timbers fans get into the stadium. So obviously there's some concern that there's going to be Timbers fans that are not in the Timbers section that could get in trouble one way or the other. But the thing is, like, I don't know that you could have ever stopped that, A.
Right.
Like there, and I don't know that I want to be in a situation where we're literally stopping people from buying tickets on the open market. I'm kind of uncomfortable with the idea of people having to kind of prove their allegiance to buy tickets. Whether it's, you know, like someone suggested that you don't sell to fans from an
out, you know, from a Washington or a Seattle zip code. I just think that's not, I'm not comfortable with that. And I think I'm getting a little off base here. I'm rambling, but I'm okay with 500 tickets for the first year. I think it's a good starting point. I think it's a good way to control. It's 500 people is a lot of people. You're going to essentially fill up a section and you're going to be able to make a lot of noise. I don't think that, you know, it should be, and I think it's going to be enough that you're going to have a sense that the Timbers Army is there. You know, it should be, I think for a first year, I think this is a great start.
Yeah. I largely agree with you. I think that the front office in the Sounders case made a misstep in not opening up more seating. I think 500 is a good start for Portland and Vancouver. I was and still am critical of keeping it at that 500 number for the Sounders. I think that there are arguments that have some, you know, reason behind them at keeping the allocation equal. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think that the Sounders could have accommodated more away fans and could have made a lot of the bitterness that I think some people have about this situation maybe brought it down a notch or two. With that being said, I don't think that it's reasonable to expect people who have so much investment financially and emotionally in the success, financial and on the field of their teams, to diverge completely from the way sports in the U.S. works. Yeah, you know, their away ticket allocations in much of Europe are much, much higher than the 500, which I think in the case of Quest comes to about 1%. 5 to 10% is
probably
much more common.
1.5%.
Yeah, something like, you know, somewhere in that neighborhood. And yeah, so
I bet you we have a calculator here.
Probably.
You keep talking, I'll do the calculations.
Yeah, 5 to 10%, definitely, you know, lean more towards 10% is much more common. But, you know, there are legitimate reasons for that, and mainly it's because soccer has been the most popular sport in most of Europe for going on 100 years now, and there's a more established tradition, and, you know, there's more established tradition of unpleasant things happening and needing to keep away fans separated. You know, yeah, I would love for there to be 1,000 Sounders fans that gelled in. But I also understand the reasons Portland had for not being comfortable with that, and in the same token, Vancouver had not being comfortable with that to start with. If we're still having this conversation in a year or two, then yeah, I think I will be just as angry, because perhaps even more so, because I think I'm giving the front office the benefit of the doubt that they are being cautious, that they do want to take this step by step. But, you know, for the first year, I mean, this is a 300% increase over away ticket allocations for games in MLS. The 500 away tickets that Portland got for this game, that the Sounders will get for that game, that's 350 more than any team has ever gotten for any game. And, yeah, that's not a ton, but, you know, it's a lot more than the norm. And I think we'll see it steadily increase until, you know, maybe we're approaching the numbers that the supporters groups are happier with. The important thing to consider about Portland, especially, is that their stadium really has a capacity of about 18,500, I think, is in that ballpark.
I believe it's actually 18,627.
Oh, is that? Okay. Frightening that you know that.
That's because that's the attendance number that they reported every game. So I'm assuming that's the actual capacity.
I think that it's expandable to 22,000 if they take the tarps off. But they can't really take the tarps off yet because it would, I believe, violate fire code in the...
pish posh.
On the conferences. And I guarantee you that fire marshals would love to show up and say something about that.
I bet you those fire marshals are Beaver fans too.
I bet you they are.
So they're all mad that the baseball team left. Right? That was the baseball team, Beavers.
It was. Yeah. It was Portland Beavers. Good job. But you know, there are legitimate reasons that they can't expand the capacity beyond the 18,627. And there are legitimate reasons that maybe they don't want to say we're going to give up more than 500 seats instead of selling them to Sounders fans. Maybe there are people that are not really interested, that, you know, maybe you're thinking about getting interested in the Timbers that are like, you know what, I want to go see what this rivalry is all about. I think that there are a lot of people in this country that first got sucked into soccer because of the atmosphere, because of the environment, because of the...
Guilty. You know, I'm guilty of that, I have to
admit. Yeah, I think a lot of people are. And, you know, and so maybe they don't want to turn those people away for this game. I mean, I think...
It's, you know, and I think you're saying... I think we agree that it's... The reality is that we're talking about year one.
Right.
We're talking about, you know, and it's like if we're right here talking about 500 seats at this time next year, I think both of us will be much more in arms about it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I think that's absolutely the case. Yes.
All right. Well, we are going to do one more segment and we're actually going to talk about the game itself. We do have an actual game. I suppose we should talk about the actual game, right?
Yeah, I think probably.
The Timbers, both of us have expressed a fair amount of skepticism over their ability to be a real contender until they can prove that they can get results on the road. They have right now 1 point in 4 road games. But as Michael talks about in our interview, he, you know, those, you could probably put an asterisk next to a few of those. You know, the first game of they started their season 3 games on the road. That's obviously tough. The loss to TFC definitely jumps out at you. But other than that, I don't know that they looked horrible on the road. They tied New England. They lost at the Galaxy 3-0, which is a pretty bad loss. And they lost 3-1 against the Rapids, which was a bad loss. But, you know, the Galaxy and the Rapids are both pretty darn good teams. So they've been literally unbeatable at home. They don't play a possession style game really at all. It's very much a quick striking. I don't want to say it's counter striking because I don't feel like it's all counters, but when transition into their offense, it's a very quick transition.
It's Route 1. They play very much Route 1, very traditional football, and they do it well. They have a lot of speed on the wings. They have the prototypical big center forward in Kenny Cooper. They have some fairly skillful midfielders who can play the ball in the air fairly well. And, you know, they've got, I don't want to say a solid back line because let's not kid ourselves.
Center backs are not any great shakes, I don't think.
No.
Well, their whole defense is not great at defending.
Right. But they have a back line that has decent field vision that can, you know, get the ball where it needs to go, which is at, you know, to Kenny Cooper on the other side of the center line pretty quickly. You know, they're very much in John Spencer's mold, I think. And they do what they do fairly effectively. I feel like I'm making it sound like the Timbers play very ugly and unrefined soccer. And I don't think that's the case. They play just the very, very United Kingdom style of soccer, very British or Scottish style of soccer.
Welsh? Would you even say Welsh?
Yeah, you could say Welsh. I'm going to lean more towards English, though, even though John Spencer is not English.
He's Scottish,
I believe. Yeah, and the Scots like to keep the ball on the ground a little more traditionally. But, you know, they worry me in the attack because I think that DC showed this team is a little bit susceptible to speed on the flanks and the counter.
They have some fullbacks that like to get forward, that's for sure.
They do. They definitely do. And the Sounders aren't really in as much a position to take advantage of that as maybe they would have been at the start of the year.
They got Rodney Wallace on the right, and they have Steve Purdy on the left. Is that right?
Sounds right to me.
And both of them are both good at getting forward. I don't know that to the point that both those guys have been in the box almost more than I would be comfortable with if I was a coach.
Yeah, they play an attacking style. Let's make no bones about that. They, I think, recognize their limitations and try to counteract that with scoring a ton of goals. They did that, you know, when I watched them at the Cascadia Summit, I was struck by how much they got forward as a team. You know, they're just going to attack. I think that the Sounders up the middle are you know, capable of dealing with that. I would be very much surprised, though, if the Timbers left Quest without scoring a goal.
Yeah, I have to admit, I'll be a little surprised if the Sounders are able to get out with a clean sheet.
Yeah.
I think more so, you know, you can say this always, but I think more so than normal, scoring first is going to be a really big deal for the Sounders.
I think so. And luckily, they're playing Portland, and Portland's defense is hilariously bad. So
right. So that's possible that the Sounders could certainly score first. I do hope, you know, what's your expectation with Roger Levesque? Does he play a significant role in this match?
I sure hope not. And I, you know, that sounds mean, but I don't. Yeah, he's a part of this rivalry in the recent history of this rivalry, and that's awesome. I don't really have a lot of patience though for sentimentality when the games actually matter. It would be awesome if Roger Levesque could get in the game, because I think if Roger Levesque gets in the game, the Sounders are probably winning. But no, I don't want Roger Levesque to start. He's not one of the best 10 outfield players on the team.
But do you think he's going to play a significant role? Do you think he'll, let's say this, do you think he's going to come in the 85th minute and score the winning goal?
No, because I think the Sounders will be winning by multiple goals by the 85th minute, honestly. And I honestly,
okay, good. I like that answer.
Maybe, I don't know. I mean, Roger Levesque is not, I think that Roger Levesque is not as bad as a lot of people, including myself at times, probably make him out to be. And he's certainly not as good as people make him out to be. He's perfectly capable of coming into a game and scoring a goal. And if he's going to do it, this is as good a game as any. It would be hilarious. It would be hilarious. It would be especially hilarious. I don't know where they're going to put Timbers Army. I'm assuming
that it's going to be in the north.
I'm guessing the far east.
Northeast corners. That's usually where the supporters have been, right?
Yeah. So, you know, if the Sounders are attacking that end, it would be hilarious if he scored a goal. And man, they don't like him at all.
No, they don't. They really don't like him. I do find some. I don't know. It's like I don't know if you read the ESPN story today about the Roger Levesque thing, but. If you didn't read it, by the way, you should go check out ESPN. There's a pretty cool article from Jeff Carlisle. And one of the things they talk about is, like, Roger going over to play an exhibition game for the Timbers at one point when it was unclear if the Sounders were going to come back to USL or not. And he was booed mercilessly wearing a Timbers jersey. And apparently the Timbers Army had this whole list of things that he had done wrong. But then in this story, when they're asked to recount this list, it's like, oh, well, I think it was this, or I think it was that. And so I have a feeling that there's a lot of folklore about what Roger Levesque has ever done to anger the Timbers Army.
I'm sure. But, you know, I'm sure he's also done some things meriting angering the Timbers Army as well.
Oh, I'm sure.
And
I'm
know sure. They hate Freddie Montero. Good Lord.
Yes, they definitely do not like the Freddie.
And I would hate Freddie Montero, too, if I were a Timbers fan. Perish the thought.
Sure, absolutely. But I'm sure we'll hate Jorge Perlaza, and we hate Kenny Cooper.
Yeah, I really can't stand him.
Yeah, who else? Jack Jewsbury. What the hell, right?
It's funny, because I really like Jack Jewsbury, too, until he went to the Timbers. Now he's their captain? Really? Come on.
Yeah, come on. You picked a guy up a week before the season started. You got a captain a week before the season.
Over the guy that was handpicked by Sir Alex Ferguson for his academy.
Who's that?
Kenny Cooper.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
What I remember the Ryan Poor. Ryan Poor was supposed to be the god of Portland. Has he played yet?
He's played. Has he? I don't know.
He was supposed to be this god. Ryan Poor, he's just playing in USL because they won't pay. He can make more money in USL. He's awful.
Yeah, he really
is. That's where we start claiming.
Okay. Yeah, it's true. This is the trolling portion of the program. Yeah. No, I mean,
guy flushed out of the MLS, and he's hurt.
Right.
That was supposed to be your big offseason pickup. Eddie Johnson, you made such a big deal about signing all these Division II guys, and none of them play.
Right. Well, you somehow picked the worst version of Eddie Johnson. You had an Eddie Johnson to pick, and you somehow picked the one that's worse than the famous one.
Well, but they did get Eddie Johnson and Kenny Cooper. If they had gone with the OG Eddie Johnson, they would have not been able to get Kenny Cooper, if I understand the rules correctly.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think they probably made the right choice, but man, Kenny Cooper, I will say this about Kenny Cooper. He does not look like he should be playing a team where a lot of running is involved.
He should be running
around a lot. Well,
he's
maybe
like an out of shape Nate Jakewell.
He really does. And I was proud of him for getting himself over the bar when he did that chin up.
It would have been better embarrassing if he had just
it just pulled the whole
thing. I'm struggling. That's me. That's my struggling noise, by the way. It looks better in real life.
Do you have a prediction for the game, Jeremiah?
5-0? No, I said it was 5-1.
Yeah.
No, okay.
5-1.
5-1? Should give him one?
Yeah, I think they'll score.
You know, I was on Around the League, and they asked me for a score, and I was like, 2-1? And they're like, 2-1? What kind of prediction is that? And I said, okay, well, 5-0. Yeah, that's much better.
Yeah.
So 5-1 is probably a much more fun prediction. Let's go with 5-1.
I mean, it's not realm of possibility. Do what?
Sounders have never scored 5 goals, have they?
It seems like they would have had to.
But not in their...
Not in MLS play, no.
Well, I was talking just MLS.
Yeah.
Scored 4 goals is the most they've ever scored.
I think that it seems like they scored 5 as an MLS team in the Open Cup, but I could be wrong about
against,
that.
Against, like, the Salinas Saraharos or something?
Yeah, something like that. I don't think the Sounders are actually going to score 5 goals.
I don't either.
No.
But 3-1, maybe 3-1, 2-1. I'll take 2-1. I would love 3-1, though. I would like to not be freaking out at the end of the game.
I think 1-0 would be hilarious.
I don't want to see a 1-0 game.
I don't either, but it would be funny in retrospect.
I'll take any win, though. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No. I mean, it would almost be funnier if Portland had the lead for some stretch of time, and then the Sounders just came back and destroyed them. It would be hilarious.
I disagree.
Well, I guess we can't always agree on everything.
Yeah, that's our big disagreement. Would it be better if the Sounders came back and won? You know, it would be cool if the Sounders gave up a goal in the first minute.
Yeah,
and then they scored right after, and then they ended up winning in a rout. Because okay, I'll agree. As long as
trail
for more than a few minutes, I'll be okay.
Like if Portland gets an early goal somehow, and then you know, and their fans get excited and snotty, and then hey, guess what, guys, you're bad.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. One more prediction. Is it possible? Will both supporters groups claim victory in the terrorist war? I predict yes.
Of course they will.
Will one side say I could not hear the other side? And not it like they'll in all seriousness they'll say we were drowning them out. We could not hear them.
Well, and in reality they will be, because when you're surrounded by, you know, even as few as 149 other people singing the same songs as you are, you're not really gonna, you know. Maybe the call and repeat. That would probably drown out even your own voice, but
I actually there's a part of me that hopes that they start doing a Portland Timbers, and then there's sucks.
That would be good. Yeah.
That would be very high school, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, the last time that Timbers Army came to Quest for a game that counted, they wore their Chicago Fire jerseys, and there's a fairly hilarious YouTube clip of that floating around.
Wait, what?
You don't remember this, where the Timbers Army and the
Timbers Army,
yeah, and they joined up with the Fires supporter group, and I heard about this, and there's a YouTube clip of them they've just started a song and an echo chant starts, and they just stop dead in their tracks. I don't think we'll see that for this game, but it would be pretty funny if we did. But yeah,
it would. Yeah. Well, okay, so I think that was a fun. I think that we ended with a bang.
I think so. I agree.
Well, hopefully next week we'll be able to come talk about a victory, or else we have a show. We might not have a show next week if we lose.
If we lose, we'll have a show, but we'll both be hammered.
Yes, I like that idea.
Yeah.
We're going to start doing this show. If there is a bar out there that would like to have us do the show there and pay us a drink, we right. would be happy to do that.
Well, you don't even have to pay us to drink. You just have to not charge us to drink.
Or not charge us to drink.
Right.
We'll take that too.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll.
But we should ask to be paid. We should at least ask, don't you think?
We should, yeah. Well, you don't want to undersell yourself. Yeah.
It's kind of sad.
We promise we will drop the name of your bar once on the show.
If right. We'll tell people about it.
Right. When we see you.
All right. Well, anyway, this is No Saudietis. I'm Jeremiah O'Shan. Aaron Campo was with me today, of course. Thanks to Michael Orr of Mount Football Show and Go Sounders.